Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Lionel, how do you work that one out? You know, my missus could have played against him.
I've got to be careful, haven't I?
I'm sorry and all this. That's a lot of. You've got to die to get 3 points.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome along to a very special edition of the Die for 3 Points podcast. My name's David Prutton, alongside, of course, Neil Warnock, and we are here in Manchester, not staying too far from a certain theatre of dreams, are we, Neil?
It is, yeah. We're right next door. I mean, we're staying in the hotel, Gary Neville's hotel. I never thought I'd ever be in a bedroom with Gary Neville behind me on the wall. I think that's one of them things that you... I thought it was a nightmare when I woke up.
That's the thing, will you get to sleep, though, tonight, because he's watching over you?
No, but, I, it's a nice hotel and next to the ground, and we're very fortunate today, Dave, aren't we?
We are indeed.
To have what I call a friend as well, but a fellow manager in Steve Bruce. And welcome, Steve. Thanks for coming.
Great to see you. Great to see the pair of you.
It's a pleasure to be able to sit here and chat to you both, and hopefully the next however long we are going to talk for, I can sit here and just listen to you two swap stories. I've seen you both greet each other in the car park, we've walked upstairs, we've sat down, and it's very, very, very obvious that you two are very fond of each other. Where does that start, and what were the first impressions?
Where does it start?
Shouting at him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think for me, the first time you come up against Neil, you understand what you're going to get very, very early, in terms of management anyway. And for me... in management, I didn't think I was ever going to go on to do 20-odd years and, 1,000 games. And when I see somebody like Neil, was always wowed. How does he have the enthusiasm, the same will, same drive, same energy, what you need? Because when you come up against these teams, you know exactly what you're going to get. and of course, you get him in the dugout who gives you all sorts of abuse coming from. So very, very, very early in the early managerial one was I'm up against Neil and his teams. And it's crept in over the years, a sort of a friendship that we've...
I think it's just mutual respect, really, Dave. Yeah. We know what we're like during the 90 minutes. Hey, make no mistake, he's no bloody angel.
Trying to make out his wallflower there, aren't
they? He said a few things to me in his time. Oh, yeah. But it's one of them things that my type of teams have always had to be like that, because we've never had the top players. And Steve's built, he's had genuine lads wherever he's been when you look at the squads he's had. So they've always been really competitive games and nothing... he's only a kid, isn't he? He's only playing at it 1,000 games.
He's got ages left.
He's got ages left.
I somehow don't think so, Neil. I really don't. You have to believe me in that one.
That is the remarkable thing. We are talking about two careers here that have spanned such a long period of time. I mean, there was a stat that I read, Steve, with regards to your involvement in football, either as a player and a manager, that stretches back to 1979. unbroken year on year, season on season, in different places, of course. When you both sat here now, I'm really intrigued to hear you swap stories about kind of similarities in that. But where does that seed of longevity come from? Is it purely down to a passion
for this game? First of all, Dave, you know, when you put a stat to me like that, it's like, well, how lucky have I been to have been in it for so long, not just in playing, to being in management and to being in it some 40 years. Mm. It's the only thing I really know. It's the only thing I really enjoy is a game of football, whether it's a World Cup semi-final we're watching tonight or what it is. A game of football has always been the thing that I've enjoyed most. So I look at
what you've done, Stephen. When you know your playing career, and it's been very similar to your managerial. You started off really at the bottom, didn't you? You know, Gillingham, I think it was, wasn't it? Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
And then you build up, and you end up at the. I mean, we're outside Old Trafford now. I mean, what a theatre of dreams that is. and you've managed to play there and. You and Pallister, what a relationship was that is. I mean, I look at how you two played, and I think to myself, wow, what would Gareth Southgate give for you two at this moment in time? And that's not being disrespectful to Harry or John Stones. I just think, wow, that's what we're lacking at the moment. We're lacking leaders, I think, at the World Cup. In England, we've got a lot of good, nice players, but just leadership. Whereas you, not just the way you played, you two, but I think, you used to boss it, didn't you?
Yeah. I think first of all, I had to really get on to Big Pally's back, first of all, because he was a bit different, Big Pally. So I had to be constantly, he was a little bit laid back, Gary. And the one thing he wanted to do was get him a bit angry, because once he got angry, he was a different kettle of fish now. And I have to tell you, he was. For somebody 6'4", 6'5", who's wonderfully balanced and quick and handled the ball really, really well. And even Gary, I think only got 17 caps. And I think the one thing that when you talk about England or whatever, it's the one thing which I thought, is the one thing that I never got a chance. I never even got into a squad. So
I never got into a squad.
But do you know the two managers in particular, Sir Bobby Robson and Graham Taylor, the picked lads who all went on to have Terry Butcher, Tony Adams, Des Walker, all these types of people played year in and year out for years, all must have got 70, 80, 90 caps, I would have thought. So that was the one thing that did elude me, and it's arguably the biggest disappointment that I've probably had.
Did you used to get that when, like for me in certain other situations, not at the top level, but did you get that when the squads come out or what have you, the disappointment?
I was the only one. I was the only one left. Fergie used to say to me, it's not your day again, son, this week. Maybe next time. I was thinking, well, and so all of them would go. So I'd be left on me jack. And to be perfectly honest, I used to go around the Malta or Cyprus or somewhere in Greece to do one of the big supporters association So I used to always have 2, 3, 4, 5 days off, but that was the one thing that eluded me. And you always thought, this might be the time, this might be the time that I might get a chance. But unfortunately, it never came.
You still didn't do bad, though, pal, did you? When I look at you, the things you won, I mean, they say about Gareth never won anything. They mention at the moment, don't they? Mm-hmm. And I suppose you're only judged on that. They talk about Pochettino, don't they? And they say, oh, he's never won anything. So I mean, I've never been at the level that Steve's been at, are you with me, in that respect? But that's why I treasure the promotions that I've had, really, and the playoffs, because Steve knows it's bloody hard, isn't it?
Well, it's a different kettle of fish when you go into management.
Oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely. And
how did you get into management, Steve?
So, really, Neil, I have to tell you, to start with, I was coming to the end. So I've left Man U. I was 36 and left when Eric scored the winner after the cup final against Liverpool, remember? And then I was 36, and then I went to play for Birmingham for a couple of years until I was 38. And then I'm 38, 39, thinking, what are you going to do? And I thought at the time I was going to go into maybe soccer schools. I was going along that one. And would you believe we had a big sponsorship deal lined up with Honda? I was going to go into the inner cities, into areas where they couldn't really afford to go on. So Honda had quite lovely sponsored us, and I was going to go down that route. And then I get a phone call to say, would I be interested in going to play a manager of a club that you know well, yeah, in Sheffield United?
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, why not? You know, player manager, that sounds okay. And off I went, and that was the journey. And what a learning curve that was in the first in the first job I had. Can was you... a war above me.
Yeah.
And them are the things that, didn't matter where you play for Man U or Gillingham, they are the things that when you come into management... Mm. That you don't really understand until you've been in it.
Now, I look at the young lads now, Steve, you know, no disrespect to, you know, Lampard and the other lads like that, that have had a good playing upbringing, yeah, yeah, and then they go into management, and I think you don't realise until you go in it that dealing upstairs is just as difficult as dealing with the players, isn't it? 100%. And they don't teach you that,
and
do
I have
they?
To say, Neil, I was not very good at that,
yeah,
to start with. That's why I probably had 3-4 clubs in 2 years, where I couldn't handle upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't handle any of the bullshit. I'm not allowed, but I shouldn't say that. And
no, it's on my program. You can, you're right on that. Okay.
So I would. That's why I didn't last very long in the first. And after really Huddersfield, I really then had a look at myself to say, do I really, really? I mean, Huddersfield, for example, we're going along very, very nicely. This is years ago. We're sitting in the top two of the league, and the owner decides to sell Marcus Stewart. I mean, I've never been forgiven in Huddersfield to this day, you know, to sell him. And you think, hang on a minute, we've got 10, 12 game days to go and games to go, and it was deadline day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't the transfer windows in them days. And we decided to sell it forward, and you think, that can't be right, you know. And yeah, after that, really, I thought, is this for me, really? Do I stick with this, or do I then go and maybe do something else? And around that time, I had a really good offer from Sky to go and work in Sky. And anyway, I stuck with it because I stumbled on Dave Whelan at Wigan, who was straight as a die.
A breath of fresh air.
A breath of fresh air. Yeah, it was like, oh, my gosh, you know. Yeah. And that sort of taught me that, yeah, wow, if you get somebody above you who wants to do well, and what an unbelievable job he did for Wigan.
Doesn't it make you want to go into work, Steve, when you've got an owner like that or somebody at the top like that? You know, you look at, I mean, I look at some of the people I've had working for, dear me. I mean, I've shook a couple of chairman's hands, you know, about contracts, and it's cost me millions, you know. Because they're not bothered, are they, about reneging on anything?
I think there could be one or two chairmen who could tell us stuff about me and you, by the way, and all, by the way.
I'm sure. There'll be a podcast listening going on somewhere at the same time.
I'm sure Simon Jordan's listening somewhere along the line. Yeah. I think he'd have plenty to say.
And I suppose that's first-hand experience, though. When you mention about thinking about whether this was for you, and having spoken to Neil at length about this, and I'm just trying to work out, you mentioned young managers there. Was there anyone at that time that you bounced off that you went looking for advice from and saying,
the easiest one of all, the easiest one of all was obviously I could pick up the phone to Sir Alex. Mm. And I remember him when I got the Sheffield job, and I just paraded myself with the scarf and all the rest of it. And I wanted to sign the centre-half at Man City called Kit Simons. Remember Kit Simons?
Yeah, yeah.
He was on a free from Man City.
Yeah.
So I go up to the chief exec, and I've just signed the pay and done all this, and said, listen, it's a free transfer. And he looks at me and goes, nobody told you? Told me what? He says, we'll need a certain amount of money in by the end of the month, Steve, or it's going to be a bit of a struggle. I says, well, it's only a free, but I've been promised a few fronts.
Yeah.
So he looked at me and, well, that's the way I see it. So I thought, I've only been in the job half an hour here. What do I do? Didn't have a clue what to do. So, of course, I rang up Sir Alex for a bit of advice, and he said, well, you either quit now or you've been in the job an hour. He says, I don't think that. He says, or you know that you're not going to have any money to spend. So just get on with it and go along that premises. So a little bit of a good advice, and, of course, when you can ring somebody like him.
That's a stunning contact.
It's an absolute stunning contact.
It is a kick in the teeth, isn't it, though, Steve, when you take a job on like that within... I mean, hours. I had when I was at Leeds, I worked for Ken Bates. And I really, the place was in uproar when I went. I calmed it down because they were smashing the car park up in protests and things. And we went pre-season down to Cornwall, he said to me, you know, we've got to get some money in at some stage, etc. But so I said, well, I've only got two or three players, and Chris Hewton come after Snodgrass. And Ken said, well, you know, you can have half whatever you get. You can have half to reinvest, you know. And they offered us $1 million or something like that. And he said, yeah, we should take that. And I said, yeah, we'll get a lot more than that, Ken. Leave it with me. And it eventually got up to three. And I said, look, Chris, if you pay three, you have him. But otherwise, forget it. So three. So I thought, wow, I've got one and a half, you know. And the next day, the phone goes in the afternoon. And, oh, Neil, bad news. He said, the bank's pulled the plug and have no money. And I remember saying to him, well, what about Ward, who's at Palace now? Joel Ward at Bournemouth. I said, we can get him for 200 grand. And he said, we haven't got any money, Neil. So I said, oh, you could pay over two or three years. And he said, well, you buy him then.
it does become a bit soul-destroying. And I suppose when you're in management, you get a bit pigeonholed in the way you are, a bit similar to yourself, and you were, well, we could maybe bring him in and he can maybe do us a decent job and not really demand a lot of money. And after a while, though, it becomes very, 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 very difficult, of course. Very difficult.
The amazing thing that I see from my particular vantage point now, from the outside looking in, and having the pleasure of speaking to different managers of different ages and generations, is the one that surprises you, where a club's sold to a manager in a certain way, that doesn't quite work, they move on, and suddenly the next fella comes in and suddenly they have got money to spend. They have got options. They have got a different... It's like a bright, shiny new toy, isn't it? Oh, we've got rid of one fella. This fella's going to come in and...
Well, it's happened to me in the last two big jobs I've had in Newcastle where, you know, where it's incredible.
I mean, talk about sea change as well with the money involved in that particular
big
club.
Wow. Change. Or an Aston Villa, and what a great club that was. And, you know, we just got to the playoff final, you know, and... The chief exec has just come down to see me, and Steve Round have come down to see me to say, look, we're in serious financial trouble. And a week later, Keith Wyness, who was the CEO, he had gone. Steve Round had gone. And the club was in a real, real mess. Mm. You know, when you see it now, thankfully the owners who've come in there now have...
Invested, don't they?
Oh, they've invested and they've turned the club round hugely. So... it's always difficult. It would always be nice, and I'm sure Neil would like the same to say, I'd love to be given the opportunity when you've got a few quid to spend to see what you could do with it. But
that was the great line with Sean Dyche, wasn't it, in at Burnley, cutting his cloth accordingly. But the question, he actually said in a press conference, yeah, because that's what it is, but get me to a club that gives me £1 billion and I will spend £1 billion. Because you're in that position,
I know what you're saying, Dave, but do you know, sometimes I look at, you know, the top place, you know, like Chelsea and places like that. They've got top players and does that and the other. Sometimes it's difficult to work with these players. It's not as easy. You know, I think sometimes I enjoyed the Championship because I wasn't like Steve. I didn't play at the top. So I know where I was, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And I like making poor players average and average players good. And I love the dressing room. Whereas when you go at the top, I mean, it's a different way of handling them, the top kind of players in it, Steve. But it's lovely to have that ability to have them.
I have to say something, I agree with you in management, Neil, that I've enjoyed the Championship because it's a fairer race. Very difficult in the Premier League when your remit is just to keep the club...
Stay up.
Yeah. And by the way, that sounds easy, but it's not. You know, you get beat more often than you win. And then it's all about how you keep yourself motivated yourself, because you get beat every other week, you know, and you need probably 10 wins, and you think, well, that sounds easy. 10 wins in the Premier League means it's every three and a half games you've got to win a game. Yeah. Difficult. And that's when it becomes, you know, hard work. And that's why probably I've enjoyed the Championship as much as probably what you have, Neil. Mm. You know,
it's
to drop down a level.
You know, wherever you are in the Championship, Steve, bottom team, top team, anybody beats anybody, don't
they? Absolutely.
So I always think to myself when I'm in there, well, I'll back my group of lads
against anybody. Are you with me? On the day, I know it's on the day at times, but that's why I've enjoyed that. You know, whereas, like Steve said, in the top in the Premier League, you know that the top 10, well, if you get a point off them, you've done well, really. You know, because they're so far ahead, even more so now. You know, they're going further and further away, aren't they? So it's that's why I've always liked the Championship. But you know, I enjoyed managing at Scarborough and at Middlesbrough and all these other places. Are you with me? Yeah. I've enjoyed that. What I've hated, and Steve's had a lot of it himself, is the vitriol at times. You know, I thought I did a brilliant job at Sheffield United for 7 years, turned the club round and got big crowds and all that. And then a small minority kept, you know, having a go at me and chanting and shouting at my family. And I'm thinking, I don't deserve that. Mm. You know, so I go and I said, same at Cardiff. If they turn on me, I'm blinking, you know, and I'm off. And I hate that part. Mm. Because when I started in management, there were no phone-ins. There were no experts.
No message
there boards, were nobody no. that told you where you were going wrong every 2 minutes. And you had a chance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Radio Sheffield, my first night, I remember the guy saying, Paul Walker saying, I'm phoning with just praise and grumble. We've got a man in so-and-so, and what do you want to say, Sheffield United fan? Well, Warnock's got to go. He hasn't got a clue. His tactics are terrible. He don't know what he's doing. It's substitutions. So Paul Walker says, oh, yeah, you went down today to the game, did you? And he went, oh, no, I listened to it on radio. I thought, what chance have you got, Steve?
I agree, and I've had a fair bit of stick over the years as well, as you might. And even now, I think that is, we can joke about it now, on the when it becomes now down to the social media and the all that, what that just brings a hive of negativity. And of course, that's when it starts to involve your family a little bit. Mm. And certainly that's when it becomes probably too much that you think, hang on a minute, this is bordering on being ridiculous. And I'm delighted Newcastle now are doing well. You know, I could, you know, but it didn't matter what I did up there or what we tried to do or whatever, you know, it just wasn't going to be. And over the last 12 months, a change of ownership, change of direction. You know, the new owners with me were terrific, I have to say. You know, they did say, how can we help you? And I said, look, you know, I think my time's up here because the only negative thing that's left now is myself. Mm. And would you believe I did put forward, they did ask me in my opinion, if, you know, well, who could take over? And I did recommend Eddie to them and thought, you know, he's a very, very good young manager and pleased to say that he got the job. And I am delighted that they're doing so well.
There's a real common theme there because you're talking about your experience at Sheffield United growing up a Blade, your experience at Newcastle United growing up a Magpies fan.
Yeah.
And when you talk about that side of it, and again, from my angle of working in the media and looking at these teams and covering the teams, and you talk about the vitriol and there's a presumption that men of your generation just have to get on with it. That's part of the job. You know what you sign up for. But as cultures change, as we're supposedly getting a nicer kind of environment of just life in general.
Don't kid yourself.
But that's the thing. But so, but then, yeah, so is there something between the two of you that we're looking at here that it obviously affects you both emotionally and quite deeply, because it goes from beyond being judged for your job to going after you, going after your family. That can't be right, and that can't set you up later in life to be able to deal with that, surely.
Don't forget as well, you know, when you've been a Sheffield United fan or a Newcastle fan, they think you are a fan. Mm. They think they're entitled to say anything they want to you, as if they was in a pub, and without any comeback. And, you know, and that's why the social media now, you know,
because you can't escape it. You could leave the ground and that'd be done, or hear it on the radio. But now they can get you anywhere.
But like Steve says, you can take it up to a point. It's when your family gets tainted or something like that. You think, this is it worth it? Mm. You know, is it worth this and that? And at the moment, the football has gone so far, hasn't it? Now people think they can say what they want on social media and get away with it, and that shouldn't be the case. I don't think that should be. I don't think we get enough protection.
I think not just in football either. No. If I'm being brutally honest, you know, I do worry about grandkids and things like that, and I worry about the whole thing because it's just vile, the whole situation. There's never any good news on it.
No.
Is there?
No. Well, I said to William, you know,
and I don't read it. I mean, I'm probably in a generation where I don't do it. Yeah, I believe you've got a Twitter account.
Oh, Steve. Hey, listen, I'll take a picture of me and you and it'll go on Twitter and there'll be, wow. Listen, we'll have about a million hits and I'll think, how sad are people when they're coming on my hits? And they ring me up and say, hey, your cycling went well. We might have 1.5 million people hits. Well, but well I do done. Listen, I've got to say, Steve, at times I do enjoy it now because with nothing to do, you know, I'm at home and what have you, it just gives me a few laughs and what have you now.
Of course.
I was saying about with William, you know, and Amy, my kids, when they go out, I always, you know, even now I say, no. Be careful, please.
Jesus,
you know, go, you know what you do and who you're going and driving and all that lot. Because you just don't, you've got to be, if you're in the wrong place, innit? You know, that's how it is life at the minute, isn't it? It's so
it's not great,
on a
is
thread,
it?
Isn't it? You know, so I think we've had, you know, before all you lot, David, before you lot come out with all your computers and everything, do you know,
that's life, only an iPad that you pointed at.
Life was a lot simple when we used to take our jackets off for goalposts. It were a lot simpler in them days.
That's the thing that I'm really intrigued with regards to you two. Like, you look at over 2,500 games together, over 700 as a player. And the generational shift, having been in the game for such a long period of time. And I say this without any hint of condescension at all as a 41-year-old man sat here. The game
all right,
that you...
All right, you don't have to go in.
Nearly 42.
Oh, well, I wish I was 41.
The game that you two first stepped into, what is recognisable from that and what has changed completely?
Well, I think the big thing for me, what changed football for me, and I was playing at the time, was the back pass rule. Changed everything, I have to say, because the game became then, I mean, can you remember, was it the same semi-final where Gazza kept chipping it back to his goalkeeper, remembering taking a catch, and the last 10 minutes of the game just went away. That was a big, huge thing and look, I was a centre-half, and the first challenge I made against the centre-forward was always to tell him, here we go. Mm. And now that's not allowed at all.
No.
It's not allowed. There's no contact in our day. I would never want to be on the floor, you know. It becomes now part of the game.
And you wouldn't see any diving in them, no. Not like nowadays. I mean, you look at some of the theatricals now going on, and it's embarrassing, isn't it? Really,
some of
you know, like if they were in a dressing room with Steve Bruce and Pallister or me or my lads or Chris Morgan, they'd get them up, they'd get them by the scruff of the neck. Stop diving, stop going over like that.
I think that's where it changes. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that we have to guard against is getting labelled a dinosaur, which has been thrown at, I'm sure, Neil and myself, and how you go with the times. But I think the biggest thing that I miss is the dressing room it used to rule. Didn't you have to... Didn't always have to go for the manager.
Mm.
Didn't have to do it. The number of times
the captain
that we would sort of the strength of character, the great side that I played in, and I say great because I think it's often used too much, was the 94 team where right through the spine of it were Ince and Keane and Hughes and Cantona and myself, and Bally and Dennis Irwin and Schmeichel.
Oh my goodness,
oh dear me. I mean, and the team could either... Yeah. Take us on with football or try and kick us and say, come on, you want to kick us? Come and have a go.
Mm.
You know, and it was...
It's funny, Steve mentioned, and sorry to put into it, Steve mentions that and the Exalted Company, but the first English captain in the 20th century to captain a side to the double. So that goes to show he's been very magnanimous with his teammates, but you were an integral part of that side, weren't you?
I think Steve Bruce, by his teammates, they knew.
Yeah.
I bet you they ribbed him. About not getting in England in squad. But I bet you any money, every one of them thought he should have been in that squad. Because he was their leader.
Yeah.
And that's why... you know, there were 10 captains, weren't there?
Yeah, really? Yeah, there were. You could pick any one of them and could all be a captain. And that was, I mean, look, I took over from as good a captain as you could ever have, and Brian Robson, you know, so to take over from him. And, you know, I got a phone call from Sir Alex and said, where are you? He says, I'm just at home. He says, can I come and see you for a cup of tea?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I thought, what does he want? So I says, yeah, of course. He says, is the good lady home? I says, yeah. He says, okay. He says, I'll be there in 20 minutes. So I says to the missus, by the way, Sir Alex is coming. And he's, the gaffer's
coming. Did she say, what have you done wrong?
She did, yeah, to start with. What are you doing? Yeah. I says, I don't know. And he came and knocked on the door and come and have a cup of tea. And he just had a look round and all the rest of it and say, ah, nice home and all the rest of it. And I'm convinced he was looking to see how I lived, where I was. He said, because during the cup of tea, he says, I want you to be my new captain. But yeah, so gee, wow. So all the time I thought, well, he could have told me that in the morning in the dressing room. Why do you want to come on? Why do you want to? And I think he came to make sure that I lived all right. And that everything was hunky-dory. And what an afternoon that was, you know, when he said, you're gonna be the captain of Man
U. How did it feel?
Well, it's arguably as good as you're ever going to get, mm-hmm. you know, from the days at Gillingham where we had to win on a Saturday to pay the mortgage at the end of the month. Wow. It was a complete
And you
contrast.
Do think back, don't you, Steve?
Yeah.
When you get moments like that, you think back to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I think back to Gainsborough Trinity at times, are you with me? Yeah, about how to handle things with people.
I mean, Gillingham, it's like that. Yeah, Gillingham was like, you know, they give me a chance and I'll always be forever grateful. But I was there for nearly 7 years. I played 235 times in the lower divisions. Mm. So 3, 4, 5 years down the line to get to here is like... it was incredible.
It's authentic though, isn't it? I mean, you literally paid your dues to get to where you got to. And let's not come away from the fact of where you grew up and where you started playing your trade. Other ends of the country?
It's I mean, big, by the way, it was going back years, Peter Beardsley and myself played for years together in the same boys' club team. Everybody in the team was all signed up and gone elsewhere apart from me and Peter. And Peter came with me to Gillingham. Mm. And they turned Peter away as well, saying he was always going to be too small. Peter then went to Cambridge and didn't quite make the Cambridge. And then a couple of years later, Bob Moncur took him to Carlisle. And what a player Peter was. When I look back at how good he was but he was only
full
tiny.
Of it, wasn't he?
Oh, he was energy. Full of energy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he was a fabulous footballer.
But it just shows you.
But he didn't get picked up.
He came out of nothing. You know, bombed out, not wanted. That's why I always say to youngsters now that get to 20, 21, never give up. Mm. If you feel, but you've got to persevere. I think sometimes it's easier now to go and play a game in your bedroom and flick a few switches than it is to go out on training ground, do a few more weights, do a few more runs, get a bit, you know, believe in yourself. Because I think that's what you've got to do. You've got to be a bit committed. You know, if you want to get to the top, I think now.
Is there any players that jump to mind? You mentioned about Peter Beardsley being passed on. Is there any players that you two have passed on and then suddenly they've appeared somewhere else and been pretty decent along the way? Or?
Not passed on. I remember, I don't know what your biggest regret regarding signing players, right? I remember Lauren DeJaffo coming to me at Bramall Lane in Sheffield and saying, Gaffer, I have a player for you. He said, a second division in France. I said, what a striker is this? I said, how much will it cost me, Lonnie? He said, £100,000. I said, we can't, for a second division striker. He said, yes, Gaffer, but he's good. You love him. He's just your type, physical, strong. I said, I can't pay 100 grand. What's his name? Drogba.
Oh, stop.
And he reminds me every time I speak to him, Lauren.
It weren't bad. That's a sizeable one.
Have you missed out on one? Any like Steve?
I've I'm sure there's not been one like stuck out like that. The big one at Newcastle in the last couple of years was Jared Bowen, who had signed from Hereford. We took to Hull for $50,000 and watch him come through. And
I nice kid as well.
Yeah, great kid, lovely kid. I had him parked in the service station on the M1. Waiting for the permission to see if we could do it and see if I could scramble the money, but couldn't get the money together, and he went to West Ham instead. But no, I don't think I've had any. And arguably the best one I ever had, the best player I ever signed, was for nothing. A big Frenchman called Dugarry, where I got a phone call from his agent to say, would you be interested in Christophe Dugarry? I says, what, the World Cup win?
Let me think.
What? Of course I would. He says, I think I can get him on loan. I says, nonsense. Nonsense. He said, well, look, I'm going to try and see if I can get him on a plane here. Didn't think anything more of it. Thought, just one of these time wasters, you know. And lo and behold, the agent rang me back and said, he's getting into Birmingham at 5:30. Would you pick him up? I says, bloody right, I will. Right, I will. I picked him up. And my missus was out, so I took him back to my house. So I made him a cup of tea, and he's sitting in my house, and I gave him a biscuit, and the only biscuit we had was a rich tea. You know?
Didn't even have
a chocolate one for him. And he's sitting looking at the biscuit. Steve, what is this? I'll never forget it. But and I gave him a video of the match on the Saturday, and of what the game was, we played Aston Villa or whatever. And he, for 6 months, was absolutely as good as I've seen. He was... had the lot.
I remember playing against that team when I was at Forest, and it was literally you come jogging out and you think, well, we're knackered here. They've got a World Cup win. And he had the hair, he had the stuff. He looked phenomenal. And I mean, Blues fans loved him, didn't they?
He was arguably the best player I've ever had. Unfortunately, everybody told me it wouldn't last very long. And unfortunately, it didn't. But for that 6 months, I mean, I've got him playing alongside Jeff Horsfield. Can you imagine? Yeah. Big Jeff from Barnsley, you know, hairy ass bricklayer from Barnsley, who absolutely loved him, you know. What a pair they were. And Christophe loved him as well, you know. And he was for 6 months as...
talking about Birmingham then. Funnily enough, that just brings back a memory of mine. You were on gardening leave, or not gardening leave, at Palace.
Yes.
To go to Birmingham. They wanted you, and they wouldn't let you go. And I remember this. So David Gall rang me up, David, and asked me to go over. And I went to his house. And they said to me, look, we're not sure about Steve. Would you take the job if Steve can't get? So I said, I bloody will, yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then you obviously got the permission and the rest of the
story. Neil, I had played for them for two years, so I got to know them a little bit. And at that time, I probably needed a bit of stability. And the one thing about David Sullivan and David Gold is they give managers a chance.
They do,
Probably because of that mean they don't want to give you any money at the sack, by the way. Yeah. But no, I take that back.
They were all right, weren't they?
They were very, very, very good.
I liked talking.
Neil, I had 2 years as a player and nearly seven as the manager. So, you know, nearly 10 years of your career was at Birmingham. So I'm forever grateful to them because that gave me that little bit of stability just when I needed it. Mm. Otherwise, you know, as I said to you, I had 3, 4, 5 clubs in 2 years. Ridiculous. Mm. So Birmingham was the one that I thought, yeah, they'll give me a chance.
Mm. Is there an acceptance? There's that sliding doors moment between the two of you, but in the fraternity of what managers are, because there's only a finite amount of jobs and there's a lot of managers that are out of work, I'm sure there's a protocol, maybe an unsaid protocol of ways and means about going about possibly the next job.
Nothing changes in that respect, do you? People, you know, like I knew 6 weeks before one of my last few jobs that were going to be replaced 6 weeks before it actually happened. And you get to know things like that, don't you? It happens in football. And I'm sure that my name's being put forward for a job while other people have been in. Are you with me? I'm not saying there's nobody innocent in football. But it's one
do you of, accept that? Do you understand? Is yeah. that par for the course?
Absolutely.
I think we all understand. It's not nice, but I think we all understand it.
The only thing I don't like is in one occasion, the manager that I thought was coming in was watching one of our games. Are you with me? Now, I think that, I mean, that is bending it a little bit. That. So it's, but you know, it's one of them things. Mm. Well, I look at it, me, management, now. And when they appoint a manager, I think, bloody hell, I could do a better job than that at 74. Mm. Are you with me? Mm. But that's, you know, we talk about dinosaurs. Wenger, I don't know whether Steve remembers, but I think Wenger changed everything in England, didn't he?
Absolutely.
He was unbelievable, Wenger. He brought everything. We weren't ready for nutritionists and all this bloody, you know, the technicians.
Sports science and all that. Yeah.
I mean, he brought things in. I mean, he's been criticised. I remember we Alan Brazil on TalkSport, the fans used to ring him wanting him out and all this. And I always said, be careful what you wish for. And they've only just turned it round now. I don't know how many years it is since Wenger left.
It's taken a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it's... But he
I think
changed.
He was... I think you're right, Neil. I think he was, at that particular time, and for a lot of the English young managers at the time now, everybody thought they were going to get an Arsene Wenger. Mm. So he opened the door, really. Before Arsene Wenger come along, there was no real foreign managers as such.
No.
And now we've got, look, we've got arguably the best in the world who are running the big clubs now. But I think Arsene Wenger was the one. And fair play to David Dean who brought him over because he wasn't a huge big name.
He
won
wasn't.
This and he'd won that and he won
But don't you think, Steve, as well, with Wenger, he brought stuff here and we'd never seen it before, had we? What he brought. He changed all the outlook. And we're talking about dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Well, me more so than Steve. But dinosaurs, that's a load of rubbish, that. You change as the things change. Mm. If somebody brings something in and it's going to give you another 5%, you
Why would you go along with
Why
it?
Why would you not go you along with it?
And it's an evolution more than anything, isn't it?
Yeah, I think big things, diet, and of course what they bring in, of course, you know, back in the start of mine, there was a drinking culture, which has definitely now changed in this country. You know, with that there's no more that you can go and have six, 8 pints of a beer on a Saturday night and do what you know what.
Yeah, but they'll not enjoy it as much now, will they, Steve? They won't enjoy the evenings as much now.
They are quite serious, aren't they? I mean, it's funny you mention Arsene Wenger because I suppose if you throw that forward to if a manager such as he was getting the Arsenal job today, there could possibly be uproar. Well, where's he managed? Who's he taken care of? What did he do as a player? And that groundswell of public opinion might go against
it. There was all of them questions being asked at the time, you know, where, you know, he's coming in here to do this, that and the other, and he's come from,
like you said,
you know,
David
from Japan.
Deserves a lot of credit for that,
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even though I think it was to the detriment of a lot of British young managers or whatever, that became a trend.
Because they wanted to thought, if he, let's get another Wenger. Yeah, let's look all over the world.
Yeah,
I see where you come from.
But the fundamentals that you two would have seen over a long period of time wouldn't have changed, would they? The big thing that I hear when we, because there's so many platforms to discuss football nowadays, is the key word, philosophy. And I think there's a story, and this is I might have been muddling this with regards to Tony Pulis meeting out some wisdom, which, what's your philosophy? Well, win football matches, and then that you give yourself half a chance. Has that come to the fore more? It's not just about winning, it's about how you win as well.
Style of play comes into it. How are you going to play? I think now Pep has created this, you know, playing out from the back, where some of the stuff now that you see when you're playing out from the back now, they're playing 1-2s in their own 18-yard box. And
you've got goalies doing dummies.
This is the way you've got to play. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, as managers now, especially these days, you are given a core of players and it's very, very difficult to just change them around because now it's transfer windows. So you've got twice a year, you know, and you can't really, so it takes time. And sometimes, you know, you're not going to get time because you've got to win a football match. And so philosophy sometimes have to go out the way.
I went to Steve's old club, Norwich, right, for an interview. And they sent a 40-page dossier to my house to fill in about I didn't look at it, but everything. It was like unbelievable. And I went there and there was a big boardroom table and there were all the people sat round. I don't think she was there, bless her. I think there were quite a few others there, you know, around a doctor. Mm. The first question this guy looked, to my left hand, I see him now, an old guy, he looked up and he went, "Well, Mr. Warnock, Do you think our fans would like your style of play? Do you think they would like you and the way that your teams play at Norwich? So I took a deep breath and I looked round at everyone. I looked him in the eyes all the way around the table, and I come back and I took another deep breath and I went, yeah, I think they'd love to win games. Fans. And I thought, you haven't got this fucking job, have you? You know, I thought, that's another job you have not got.
Yeah. But what chance have you got when that's part of the actual kind of questioning
process?
I think
Bruce Riot got it after me. That was it at the time. Right. But no, but some people like interviews. They interview for sake of it. Some, they already know who they're going to appoint. You know that. That's football.
I'm intrigued with that process of the interview. Has that changed over the course of the time that you two have been in football?
You basically had more jobs, Steve. You get jobs. You know you've got them, don't you?
You know you've got them. Most of the time. You know you've got them before you go for the interview, probably.
Yeah.
But you've got an outstanding. But hey, listen. Now you hear all this presentation and these big laptop displays of what they do and what they haven't done and what they're going to do and this, that and the other.
And you want Mendes as your agent, don't you? We all want Mendes as our agent, don't we now?
Yeah. You bring with you half a dozen players. I don't think that process changes. I think people have got an idea.
Mm.
I think what changes is if maybe that person's not available or whatever, then they've got to go down a process of...
I think sometimes, Steve, when you go to speak to a club and you know you've got the job if you want, you've got a good feeling, I think sometimes it's good for the manager to interview him, to get a feeling about, what can we do? What will you let us have? How can we go? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The other way around, I think sometimes I've interviewed them
sounds right, because you're the one that's going to bear the brunt of everything good, bad, ugly that goes on in that football club, surely.
But I think it's coming back more now regarding the English lads, isn't it? The English lads seem to be getting a bit of a chance now.
So why do you think that is?
I think they've run out of options abroad. I mean, I look at the names cropping up now. They don't do anything for me at the minute, some of the managers that they're talking about. So
I'm delighted that somebody like Frank has had a go and Steve Gerrard, because of that generation, they probably never need the money.
Absolutely.
So, I'm really pleased of... People like that have come into it, and then of course others will follow. And a big trend at the minute is obviously the coaching, and a lot of people have gone down the route of the academy and worked themselves up into that area. So it changes, what becomes sexy, if that's the right word. that's the route they go down. Yeah, but I'm really delighted that there's a group of them. There's a group of them of the younger generation anyway, making a fist of it and having a go and realising how difficult it is.
You mentioned these young managers. Is there one specific nugget of wisdom that you would pass on to them if they came to speak to you?
I know what mine is, Steve. I always say, get a good chairman.
Get a good chairman.
If you can, get a good chairman. You never know. I mean, you can't pick your chairman, unfortunately.
I think that is key to it. The ones that I've had a bit of time with and all the rest of it, and is the relationship we have, your CEO or your chairman or your owner.
Are you like me, Steve? I've always done better when I've got on with my chairman.
Of course.
When I Cardiff, I love Mehmet Dalman, and Vincent was the owner, but I couldn't have got things done without Mehmet. Yeah, and you talk, don't you? You need somebody to talk to because it's a lonely job.
I mean, I went to Hull. A lot of people, more of my mates, went, Steve, what are you doing? You can't go to Hull just yet. I thought, look, I got on well with the old man who unfortunately passed away last week. And a wonderful old man who gave me the job. And a lad called Peter Chapman who... was a local businessman who obviously Assam got on really well with. And he practically acted like my CEO. He had a big company in Hull, and he practically, for 4 years, he didn't even earn a penny. I'd call Peter Chapman, and without him, to go to the owner and say, can we have this one, that one, and that one? So it does make a hell of it. It helps enormously, of course.
You look at the success that we've had. You look at the success, Steve. I bet you 90% of that is when you're happy at a club and you can be yourself. You can do yourself. I'm not saying, listen, even the ones that have helped me, They've said no to me at times. Are you with me?
Yeah.
I think they've got to
You don't mind that?
No, you don't.
You don't mind that if they say no and they give you it. You say, okay, I respect your decision, fair enough, we'll crack on. Because most of the time is a manager should never be satisfied. You've always got to try and keep improving. And year in, year out, you've got to keep improving. Otherwise, if you don't, you just go stale with it.
You used to say every quote when a manager, you know, just we need a couple of more players. Famous
just one more.
Just one more player. Yeah, we need another couple and one more player and whatever. But that's how you go in it.
But I suppose the CEOs, chairman, owners, they don't want to say you just that you're satisfied either.
No.
Really, if the ones that have want to succeed and want to get better and it's vitally important, though, that relationship.
I think there's more so now, Dave, with not directors of football, but there's a lot of people involved now that they're appointing to run the side, who I think you've got to be careful, because some of these people, they think they'd really want to be the manager, but they weren't good enough to be the manager, so they're in the next powerful job. And that's where they interfere with the manager at times. So,
and that's where the political side of it comes into it.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of younger managers have got to deal with that side of the coin, you know.
I think that's going to come more and more into it, Neil, isn't it? Especially in this country now, is a bit like the foreign teams, is director of football is going to be the next thing, isn't it? You know, where we... So, and I can understand it be difficult for people like me and you, but... Again, if you have a relationship, if that's who you deal with, then
if you could work with somebody though, Steve, I look at it now and I reckon I could do that sort of job 2 days a week with a manager that trusted me. Are you with me? Or that I like working with.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to do 7 days a week to do that job. I think they should pick our brains, young managers, a little bit more. You know, with the knowledge that we've got and built up. The unfortunate thing for young managers is they might think you're a threat because of where you've been and what have you. But I think there's a role. I don't think people like myself or Steve should just be cast away. I think we should be trying to help the younger generation. The problems that they get, talking about directors and so on, so and sponsors.
The stuff that you don't learn on the pro license and
across
the coaching
budget. You don't get them
in
the degree. Mm. Well, the LMA is fabulous. But you don't, you know...
Has any young managers come to you and reached out as time's gone on?
I've spoke to a couple. I mean, the lad at Plymouth at the minute, Stephen Schumacher, is a lovely, lovely young man.
And very
he's doing
well, isn't
very,
he?
Very,
very well.
Well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Doing well.
And this, but they all still have to learn in that respect. And I think that's where... I remember years ago, it must be about 8 or 9 years ago, I said to the League Managers Association, if you want to send somebody to follow me for 2 or 3 days... Mm. Non-stop, then you're quite welcome
Give
to
it. Give a flavour, yeah.
Never got one.
Really?
Now, for me, if I was somebody who weren't working and I got an opportunity to go and follow Neil Warnock for 2 days, you know, yeah, all right, they wouldn't get in till 10 o'clock in the morning. They'd think, bloody hell, that's a good start, isn't it, 10 o'clock in the morning. But I'm there, you know, I'd be there a long time during the day. And I thought, what an opportunity missed. I couldn't believe it, Steve, that nobody that were out of work Or whether the LMA asked, I don't know. You know, so it's...
He asked me before, that's the one thing I would say to a young one, is somebody alongside you gets away with grey hair. Mm. Because John Benson, I stumbled over John Benson at Wigan many years ago. And you know, back in the day, when I first went into management, if the tea was cold, that wasn't hot enough, the kit wasn't right, this wasn't done, and all the rest of it. And John Benson was the first one to say to me, Steve, I'll look after that, and I'll look after that, right? You just win on Saturday and keep all your attention and keep all your focus on winning on a Saturday because that'll keep me in a job, Steve, if you win on Saturday. Never mind anything else.
You see,
winning on a Saturday and that little bit of wisdom, grey hair...
Steve, when I watch, I know we're not talking yet about England.
You can talk about whatever you want.
When I look at England now, I think Gareth's done a fabulous job.
Yep.
And I don't think anybody could have done a better job than Gareth. I just think at knockout competition, when it's a knockout thing, I just think it's 10%, 15% less. I think he's got to find somewhere. And I look around at his staff. And his players, and they're all nice people. I think why doesn't he get somebody like a young Neil Warnock or somebody that can just just rattle a few cages here and there. Do you know what I mean? They all look lovely people, yet nobody could do a better job than him, Steve.
No, I agree with you. Since Sam left and he took over, then I think he's been absolutely immaculate, and I'm delighted for him because he's one of football's good guys. Huh?
He is.
He is as genuine as what you see, Gareth. And it would have been great for Harry to smash that penalty in and we'll beat the French or whatever, but it hasn't quite happened for him just on the big moments. No. Them big calls where it's that, and you know, they're defining moments, but there can't be it. He's done a fabulous job, and I hope he's got the energy. I hope he's got the energy to stay with it and see if he can win the Euros, yeah.
You know, like me, what he's going through now, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
And you know his turmoil in his mind now. Do I need to be slaughtered by that press man or that press or the fans there? Because when they did the Nation League and they lost at Birmingham, Wolves, were it Wolves ground? They lost against, was it? I don't know. I don't know who it was. Anyhow, but it, for me, that's like a pre-season game. You can't get up for it.
Friendlies.
You can't get your players up for it. So don't judge him on friendlies. When you look at competitive games, he's as good as anybody. And I think to myself, I hope he looks in the mirror and thinks, he's not going to get a better job than England. I know it's a lot of hassle. He's got to put that on one side and come back. He's got a great bunch. But I do think he's got to find something else if he wants to do that extra 10%. I think he's got to just come up with something else that he hadn't thought about at the minute. I don't know what it is.
It does feel like that, and I think we're all going to keep our breath bated to see what Gareth actually does, obviously, in the intervening few days. But what I'm going to say, chaps, is this has gone very, very swimmingly, and like any good football match, there's got to be a half-time. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a second.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.